Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, yes. Right here on 720 WGN. It is indeed an honor to welcome back to the program General Michael Hayden, mm-hmm. who formerly ran the National Security Agency and the CIA, and was a four-star general in my beloved United States Air Force, and they put me through college, and
nice.
Not because I did anything for him, but because my dad did. But I do appreciate it, and one of the most outspoken. I don't want to say critics. I just think analysts of the era of what's happening here. And you've written a book called "The Assault on Intelligence," and this is really. I love your title because as I was going through the book, you're not just talking about the assault on the intelligence community. You're talking on the assault on intelligence with a little I, and the notion of what is true and what isn't true. And that to me is the most startling moment of this era.
Yeah. So when I think back on the book and what I've written, I kind of think of it as kind of like a three-layer cake. And to be really clear, the first layer is us. It's American society and our inability to communicate. I talk about the post-truth world in which we seem to be making decisions not on data or evidence, but on preference, emotion, tribe, grievance, things like that. And then on top of that, the second layer is actually the president, who, as a candidate, identified that, kind of manipulated it, and now as president, I think, and today is a good example, makes it worse. And then the top layer is we've got a foreign adversary almost literally coming through the perimeter wire, the Russians, exploiting the first and second conditions. And that's this kind of deadly stew in which we're all now trying to figure our way through. But back to the original point you made, Ro, it's all about truth or post-truth and are not making decisions based upon data and evidence.
So this notion of the Big Sort, which was about 10 years ago, a guy wrote a book about how we, through the then burgeoning social media, now it's come really home to roost. We really do see it through Facebook and Twitter and all the rest, and the ability for people to choose what to have preference bias in terms of what kind of news they consume or what information they consume. We really are sorting ourselves along these lines, and it used to be, and what is to me so interesting is the president's really tapped into this notion that people used to be geographically separated from each other. People who live in rural areas or ex-urban areas where their houses are more than a couple miles apart from each other, they have now coalesced on social media because they have similar life experiences and similar interests. Mm-hmm. And so he's been able to tap into that notion of people who don't want to live in urban America or even suburban America because people live too close to each other. They don't trust that sort of life. And he's really found a great way to wedge their the rural interests versus the urban and suburban interests.
Absolutely right, and your comment on the technology is really important. And by the way, the technological problem would exist whether or not President Trump was
right for sure. Yeah.
So what you've got is you hit it right. We kind of self-segregate, don't we? We have our preferences, and so we like and friend like-minded folks. But it's even worse than that. The algorithms on social media, which are designed for the business model, which is to keep us on the site, to keep us clicking. The algorithms, and now we know a lot more about this, don't we, know who we are maybe better than we do. And so the algorithms keep pushing us in the direction of things that confirm our pre-existing biases. So rather than our entry into the web, rather than the existence of social media driving us to a broader knowledge of the world, we get driven by our preferences and by the algorithm into the darker corners of our own ghettos. And it reinforces our divisions. It doesn't bring us together in terms of dialogue.
You know, and one of the things I find interesting from your book is that as a former head of the CIA and NSA, you decided to go on a fact-finding mission and go to the part of America, people who voted for Trump, and this wasn't, they weren't necessarily in your direct circles, but they were in your orbit. I think your brother or someone in your yep. family. What did you find there, and how did that help you shape this book?
Well, my problem was everybody I talked to sounded like me.
Right.
and so I wanted to appreciate what other people were thinking. So literally, I got my brother to fill the back room of a sports bar in Pittsburgh during a Steeler weekend. And I paid for the Iron City and the pizza, and I had about 40 people in there. And I never quite began it, but I think the tone of the meeting was, I know most of you people. What are you thinking? And right. we had a good two and a half hour conversation. And what I learned was these are really hardworking Americans. They and their kids have fought our nation's war. They go to church. They send their kids to school. They pay their taxes. They work hard. And they believe no one cares about them. And that's what I took away from that conversation.
It's the Deer Hunter community, right? You go back to that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that Western Pennsylvania group. Hey, by the way, I'm part of that. I'm born and raised. And let me mention something I didn't say in the book, but I now realize I always felt I'm a North Sider from Pittsburgh. I bleed black and gold. A Steeler fan forever. I always felt when I was at CIA or NSA, I was carrying the values from my local community into the national dialogue. And I must admit, when I went back and talked to the folks there, although they could not have been more friendly, and I grew up with a whole bunch of them, and they've always been supportive of me, I still could not help but think that rather than my being a representative from them to the national dialogue, they now began to see me a bit as a representative of the national community back to the local folks. And that gave me great pause to think about a lot of things.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. So as you go back and you say to these folks, listen, this isn't about confirmation bias. This isn't about just agreeing with something because you might like the tax cut or you want steel jobs or coal jobs to come back to this part of the world, because that's both in Western right. Pennsylvania. My mom's from Western Pennsylvania, Washington, Pennsylvania. I mean, that area I know quite well.
Right.
I don't seem to be able to understand how it must be tough for you, because you've also seen the intelligence, you've seen the data, you see what's happening here, and you see how we were getting played by the Russians. I mean, you saw that when you were still right. In your job, but you also saw something that's very important. You also saw that the president was willing to at least play along with. I don't know if he was being influenced by them or he was influencing them. We don't know that yet. But we do know that at least he played along with them. I mean, he stood there flat-footed in August of 2016 and said, hey, Russia, if you're listening,
right.
July of 16, look, Russia, if you're listening, go find Hillary's emails. I mean, he was playing that game, and how folks can't stop and pause on that and go, even though they hated Hillary, right? They were trained into hating Hillary for a lot of reasons. Sometimes it was informed hatred. Sometimes it was just, hey, this is what my friends are saying, and this is what my Facebook community is saying. But whatever that case is, how do they not stop and go, hey, wait a second. Oh, wait. This isn't good either, because how are the Russians the good guys in this?
So my wife told me, just listen. Don't argue with these people. But it was hard. And I did bring up in the meeting what you just described, and there was a fair amount of skepticism that what you just said was a true story. And so then I just blurted out, I said, look, how many of you folks think Barack Obama wiretapped Trump Tower? And a lot of hands shut up. Mm-hmm. And I kind of went, really? I used to be the head of NSA. I know something about this. The plumbing doesn't work that way. Those guys wouldn't do it, frankly, couldn't do it. What evidence do you have? And one individual in the front row kind of looked at me, kind of put both arms out and said, Obama. And there were a lot of nods in the room. And so the real issue between us, and that's kind of the core of the book, post-truth world, we're making decisions based on tribe and grievance and preference and emotion, and they are not fact-based. And that was kind of the core of the discussion between me and my old friend.
Right. Well, if Hannity says it, or they see it on Facebook, or they see something. I mean, you know, it's funny. I have another person I know very well who came from Eastern Europe, came from the Baltic nation, was born there, escaped from there. And, you know, when it was Russian dominated, and, you know, came here a very virulent anti-Russian, anti-Soviet for sure, and then an initially anti-Putin guy. And he became really a part of that. I mean, he was almost hypnotized, in my estimation, by what he was seeing on Facebook, and he became like a pro-Putin guy. And I'm like, dude, don't you remember what you ran away from? I mean, Putin was with the KGB. This is all part of it. You know,
and we've already talked about, you know, the problem of being informed via social media. And when I asked the group, where do you get your news? A real powerful number in the room simply said, Facebook.
Yeah, well, that's becoming a larger and larger piece of the puzzle. I just think even our news sources have become a little very much tribal. If you sort of break it down, I remember in journalism school when you really had the three nightly newscasts to look at.
Right.
We would analyze every single piece of it. We'd stop and start again, and we would write down exactly who led with what and what they came to, and right before the break what they hit. And just about all three were the same. I mean, there was so little difference. But now, if you turn on CNN and then switch over to Fox, you're on a different planet.
Right, and I look. I'm under contract to CNN. I am happy there. They treat me very well, but I do know that, you know, each of the networks kind of has a preference. I'm comfortable with CNN for their objectivity, but you know, they do an awful lot of talking about the president.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, who doesn't? Let me be honest with you. That's all. Anyway, you know, he wants to be the center of attention, and it's working.
It's working.
Congratulations, you win. You're the center of attention. All right, I want to ask you about a couple things that are happening right now. We're talking to Michael Hayden, who used to run the CIA and the National Security Agency, and he's got a new book out called "The Assault on Intelligence." It is an absolute read. This is a moment that historians will be looking at for hundreds of years to come, and I say without fear of contradiction, General, that your book is going to be one that 200 years from now people will be reading, because it's really caught in this moment. It articulates exactly what I would want to say about this moment, because this is a scary thing for all of us. And forget about your preferences, whether you're a conservative Republican who wants the tax cuts and all the stuff that's happening now, and maybe peace on the peninsula, which is what I'm going to get to you for a moment here. But there is all that. But the scary thing here, the legacy of this, is that we are so tribalized. And to your point, General, this would have happened regardless of Trump. We would be in the exact same conversation were Hillary Clinton the president. We'd be arguing it just from a different perspective. And Donald Trump might actually be a creation of this moment more than he is actually an exciter of this moment or a creator of this moment himself. So
exactly right. That's why I go with that three-layer cake, with the biggest layer being us. Mm-hmm. And the president, this president, being more effect than cause of this post-truth dynamic.
Can this administration get peace on the Korean Peninsula, do you think?
Well, I hope so. And we've got an opportunity here. And I give full credit to the administration for the economic isolation, the sanctions, the diplomacy, the military demonstrations. I still don't think the tweets last summer were a good idea. I think they reduced the margins for error. They were dangerous, but at least now we're beyond that, and we have an opportunity to talk. But look, I'm going to try to be both fair and realistic here. Denuclearization means something different to us than it does to the North Koreans. So I think the best we can hope for is we get a meeting. It's kind of ceremonial. Both presidents smile, shake hands, we get our hostages back, and then they launch their bureaucracies to work out the specific details as we go forward, and we begin a very long-term process that doesn't end in any near term with the North Koreans giving up their nukes, but actually creates a world more safe than the one we have now.
And I can't let you go without asking you this question, because obviously you've been around this. You were there at the you're familiar with a lot of the intelligence prior to Donald Trump becoming president of the United States.
Yeah.
On a scale of one to, I'm just going to ask you it this way. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned should we be about how the Russians interfered in the election in 2016, and how concerned should we be about them in 2018 and 2020?
So by the term interference, we're literally not accusing them of affecting the vote count, the tally.
Not yet.
All that other stuff we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have great concerns. I'd put it up there at 6 or 7, because what the Russians are doing is eroding our confidence in our own democracy. They are reinforcing the weaknesses and the current failings I suggested in that first layer of our own national dialogue and political discourse. And the Russians have become masterful at interfering in our information space through social media and other means.
All right. General, thank you for your service to the United States of America, sir.
Thank you, guys. It's always good to talk to you.
Thank you. Michael Hayden, who four-star general in the Air Force, then he ran the NSA and the CIA, and he's now written a book called The Assault on Intelligence, American National Security in an Age of Lies. All right. That, I don't know, made me feel better or worse, but that is a great American right there. As if I could just quote Sean Hannity.
Oh, no, don't get into
it. No, I won't do it that way. I don't think he'd call him a great... He would have called him a great American 3 years ago, but he wouldn't do it now. I don't know. Anyway, here we go. Let's talk to Judy Pilak about what's coming up at the top of the hour.